Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Jeff Dunphy. It is Friday, October 10th, and this is in our year of 2014, and this is retooling for our coming of age. This morning, I'm going to chat a little about Mother Nature. I'm going to chat a little about the inside joke of certain prayers, and I'm also going to read you a story called The River and the Rope. So let's get on with things. One of the aspects of the world in which we live in is the marvel of Mother Nature. Now, the marvel of Mother Nature is all fine and good, and I think we have spent, society historically has spent an enormous amount of time conquering Mother Nature. So we who live in the northern part of the northern hemisphere in the northern climes, we conquer Mother Nature by building houses and being warm in our houses because the weather itself is in need of we are in need of shelter from the weather at times. And we spend an enormous amount of time insulating ourselves against nature. And I suspect, as you may gather, being in Mother Nature and living in harmony with Mother Nature is probably one of the greatest gifts we can give to ourselves in terms of our alignment, in terms of our happiness, in terms of our beingness. Saw a YouTube video the other day that speaks to how there is one thing that does all kinds of brilliant health things. It minimizes or mitigates depression. Creates benefits to all sorts of things. And it just went on and on and on and on. And the answer was walking. The event was walking, right? So in typical fashion, one of the things that we have played and one of the things that we are constantly held in alignment with is when we wander around in nature. The animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the mineral kingdom, and we who reside in the human kingdom. Now, the ancients tell us that the human kingdom is sort of the connecting aspect, the link between the mineral, plant, animal kingdom and the kingdom of the gods. And so when we revisit the ancient teachings and the ancient mythology, we talk about how the gods come down and interact with mankind in order to better them, in order to finish them, give them information where they can move up into the kingdom of the gods. Now, I want to chat a little about the sunflower and how it lives by example and what we can learn from it relative to our own evolution, because this is the time of evolution and it's also the time of revelation. And the time of revelation, as we've heard from certainly from the Bible and certainly from various scriptures as well. So in keeping with the whole context of revelation and evolution, let's wander through the sunflower. Everybody's eaten sunflower seeds, and consequently you pop them in your mouth and you spit the seed, the shell itself, onto the ground. But if you throw one of those whole into the ground, they are very small, and it gets enough water and it parks itself in the dirt. It sins, it germinates. It parks itself in the dirt, and it roots around in the dirt. It then plants itself, if you will. It extricates itself from its shell, and it seeks the air, or it seeks, in fact, what it seeks is sunlight. It pops itself out of the dirt, and then it builds a stalk. And for those of you who've seen sunflowers and know sunflowers, I mean, these stalks are not inconsequential. Some of them are an inch or two have an inch diameter, an inch or two diameter. So, and then it starts to grow. Now, it doesn't flower right away. It grows and grows and grows, and it peaks its head up, and then it buds, and it buds in a way that if we watch, if you go to YouTube and watch any flower budding, you will see that the bud is formed, and then it seems as if there's a big struggle, and then pop. It actually pops. So when we look at time-lapse photography, it doesn't unfold smoothly and slowly and elegantly in time-lapse. It actually struggles and struggles. There's a stressor there where it pops until it flowers. Now, that being said, there is there is something, it then flowers, and then what does it do? It turns its head to the sun. It looks to the sun. Quite prophetic, I might add. And through that, and in its brilliant sacred geometry, the geometry of how the seeds line themselves up in the face of a sunflower, there have been myriads of books written about the brilliance and the Mother Nature, the sacred geometry of Mother Nature, fractals and the like. Now, what is it that the sunflower seed does? Well, it wanders around in the dirt, it looks in the material, and then it pops its head up and it looks for the sun. What is that? What's the significance of that? What's the metaphor there? Perhaps, the metaphor is looking for that one which is above you, that bright light, or as I would tell my engineers, that genius within. That's the looking to the sun. The plant knows it. The plant digs around in the dirt for a moment. When we dig around in the dirt, the metaphor there is we dig around in the material world to find some kind of nourishment. And consequently, the nourishment that we find doesn't necessarily lead us to popping our head out of the material world and seeking our genius, seeking our soul, seeking our Father who art in heaven, which is another interesting metaphor. We sometimes tend to dig around in the dirt and seem to think that the dirt, the material realm, is the realm to which we belong, and consequently we aspire no further than to surround ourselves with a bunch of material, a bunch of goods, a bunch of cars, a bunch of cool things, cool gadgets, whether it's technology, whether it's a nice house, whether it's a nice car, a nice bicycle, or whatever it is, these become the wallowing around in the dirt. Now, in the life cycle of a sunflower, it doesn't spend much time wallowing around in the dirt. It gets enough nourishment to keep itself going, and then it pops itself into the air. Is Mother Nature a grand and brilliant example of what we need to do? Yes, I would suggest that. In its pay grade, if you will, the sunflower is far more evolved in the plant kingdom than it would seem many men are in the kingdom of mankind, kingdom of humanity. So we watch the sunflower and we give thanks to Mother Nature for showing or living by example. Now, the metaphor is wake up. Wake up to the genius within. Wake up to that aspect that you have within you that is absolutely extraordinarily brilliant and take heed of it. We are in a very interesting time. We are in a very interesting state of affairs. The planet is not doing very well right now. Mankind is not doing very well right now. We have great challenges going on. And this time of revelation is the time when we need to wake up to ourselves, our genius, our brilliance, and take note, figure out what we need to do, figure out how we best do it, and get on with things. So I'm going to now segue briefly into a little different way to review what is called the Lord's Prayer. Now, the Lord's Prayer has been around forever, and many of you, even if you are not particularly religious, you may have a spiritual bent, and the whole aspect of the Lord's Prayer is not lost on you. Now, consequently, let me pull them up. Consequently, I want to give you a different way to look at the Lord's Prayer, perhaps, okay? Because one of the things that happens with our spiritual predilections is they aren't necessarily aligned with the religious predispositions, because I think oftentimes religions get a wee bit hijacked by the selfishness or the shortcomings of humanity. And one of the things that I wanted to broach today is the esoteric approach to the Lord's Prayer. Marry it up to the fact that the sunflower, this brilliant flower in God's creation or in Mother Nature, lives by example, and how we kind of marry the two. So the Lord's Prayer begins, the traditional Lord's Prayer, begins with Our Father who art in heaven. Now, let's talk about our Father, and perhaps we could say the genius that resides in and around and for us, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. It's a brilliant aspect of your very being. The genius that we talk about in engineering school, the soul that many religions speak of, the voice of the inner silence, the voice of the silence, that aspect of you that knows, as opposed to the intellect or the yabbering mind or the emotional mind that is fearful and is used by those unscrupulous ones to manipulate you. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. There we go. When you allow the genius to manifest itself in you on earth, as it is in the higher realms, the realms of the gods, that is when you become an integrated, soul-infused personality. That's an interesting aspiration and an interesting venue on how to take the Lord's Prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. Allow us to wallow around in the dirt in order for us to fulfill our bodily needs, if you will. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Boy, isn't that a big one. How many conflicts could have been avoided if we had taken that gig, that phrase, that observation in hand? We have a lot of lack of forgiveness, and we have a lot of animosity, and we have a lot of military actions as a result of the lack of forgiveness on this planet. And lead us not into temptation, and deliver us from evil. Okay, that's a fair one. Why would you want to be around those things that are contrary to your best interests of the higher sort? And then it talks about, for thine is the kingdom, which there are no sages that I know of that do not make reference to the higher kingdom as a place of extraordinary brilliance. Thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. We often view and see the power of the lower realms in shocking form, but I'm here to tell you that the power of the higher realms makes impotent the power in these lower realms. It is a given. It is spoken of. It is written of. And that power, the power of your genius, the power of that which you aspire to be, that which your soul or your genius wishes you to manifest in order for you to fulfill your objective, the reason why you're here, is absolutely extraordinary. And then we end it forever and ever, and it is eternal. There are very few religions that do not speak of the immortality of man. They often get a bit diverted in the context of the lower sheaves or the lower vessels of men. So consequently, there we have the esoteric approach to the Lord's Prayer and how it may be of some use to us. And then I want to bring in another story that I've had for some time, but I want to bring this story in and talk about how it is germane to what we are doing and how and why it should be paid attention to.
There are two kinds of people on earth today.
Sorry about that.
The river and the rope. There were once two countries, one called the land of bliss, flowing with milk and honey, the other in an arid region full of strife and unrest, and this was the land of woe. They were separated by a swift, wide, and dangerous river, and those who sought to cross that river lost their lives in the attempt. Then one day, there came a man who, because of his love for the people, decided to try to place a rope from one bank to the other. He reasoned that even if he lost his life in the attempt, it would not matter because others could use the rope to help themselves across safely. And so he fixed one end of the rope to a tree, made a noose of the other end, and started to swim. The river was very wide and rough, and when he was about halfway across, some hunters on the banks of the Land of Woe, seeing the splashing, thought it was a great fish and shot their arrows, mortally wounding him. Nevertheless, with a last and great effort, he managed to throw the noose of his rope around the stump of a tree before he sank beneath the waves. When the people saw what had happened, they began to worship him as a hero, saying, "He died to save us, and so he is worthy of our adulation and love." And yet, although they worshipped him, only a handful attempted to cross the river, for the others said within themselves, "Even though the rope is there, and we cannot drown if we cling thereto, yet the waters are cold, the river wide, and the effort of crossing is very great." And so in the course of time, the rope was almost forgotten and became covered with weeds and entangled in the fallen branches of old trees, so that it hardly resembled a rope at all. But the worship of the hero continued, and monuments and buildings were erected to his memory, and people sang songs of adulation to him and prayed to him because of his great love for them. Second, third, and fourth generations of men came into being, and their leaders, men of learning, preached of the hero and how he had died to save them. But of the rope across the river they never spoke, for now it had been forgotten altogether. Consequently, a great confusion arose by reason of arguments and teachings and oratory, and finally many superstitions came into being, so that only a very few were able to discern the difference between folly and truth. Also, much discourse arose among them, and they quarreled and fought, and those few who were able to discern the truth were persecuted and reviled. Thus the Land of Woe became more stricken with sorrow and unrest than already it was. Finally, a body of learned men arose, and they cried, "Why this strife? All that is needful is to worship this hero as a god, and to believe that he died to save others. And lo, when we ourselves die, we shall go to the land of bliss with no trouble at all. For although our bodies cannot float across the river while we are alive, our souls will float across it when we are dead. Moreover, so great was his love and power and heroism that all we ask of his spirit he will surely do if we but shower enough worship on him in return." When the people heard this, they were overcome with joy and heaped honors upon the teachers, saying, "Great is their wisdom, for they have shown us an easy way. Simple indeed is it to worship and pray and to ask our hero to save us when we die. So now let us eat, drink, and be merry and make the best of our sojourn in the Land of Woe." But meanwhile, the spirit of that hero looked upon his brothers with sadness as he listened to their petitions and prayers. And into their ears he whispered, "My brothers, you do err, for verily I lived to save you. But alas, you should have forgotten the rope which I placed across the river between the lands of woe and bliss, for to that end did I come, and for no other. Because of my love for you, my spirit is close to you, and I will comfort and cheer you in your adversities. Yet carry you across the river I must not, however much you pray and implore." But although the hero spoke to them thus, yet too loud did they utter their prayers and petitions to hear the still small voice of his spirit, and so did they remain in the land of woe.
Okay, guys, there you go. A very brilliant story, and it holds a very important message for the would-be aspirant who is keen on discovering their genius. Today, there are far too many devotees anxious to pray and petition the masters, but not prepared to do the work. And that's the work of taking the rope across the river. And the world right now has an enormous need of heroes, heroes of men and women who will take the rope across that river to the land of bliss, and thus showing the way by their actions that there is a path, that with courage and persistence, the way across can be taken. And every man must make the journey for himself. The masters do not do your push-ups for you. We call this the path of initiation, and it must be trod alone, and it must be trod together. It's a bit of a paradox, it sounds, but nobody will do it for you. And finding that voice of the silence, finding that space deep within you to aspire to do something. Be very careful that you don't hand over the keys to your own destiny to somebody else who deludes you into thinking that they're going to do it for you. It won't happen, it shouldn't happen, and it is misaligned. Act as you will, as the sunflower, setting its example so that we can follow it by example, lead by example. Learn the art of retooling. Retool. Learn how to meditate. Learn how to glean from the masters. Learn how to glean from the ancient teachings. Learn how to glean from the ancient scriptures, the ancient books, the ancient writings, the Platos and the Socrates of the world. Learn how to garner the message. It's a very important message, and it's a message that will serve you, and it will also serve humanity at a pretty big time and need. Let us not take this journey lightly, and let us also be ever mindful that the consequence of not taking the journey is denying the genius within you, which is kind of silly. Those who have allowed that genius to shine through them, I suspect not one of them has had a regret. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, this is Jeff Dunphy. It is Friday, October 10th. This is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. Thank you very much for allowing us to be of service. See you next week.